Morning, everybody, and a warm welcome to the latest original Thinkers podcast here at Alliance Manchester Business School. I'm Jim Pendrell, I'm Research Communications Lead here at the school. Well, I'm delighted today to be joined by Simon Hayward and by Panos Konstantinides. I'll start with Simon. Simon is an alumnus actually at the school and has been appointed very recently a Professor of Practice at Alliance Manchester Business School. He's been involved with the school ever since the 1980s, actually, when he first completed his MBA, and he went on to chair our Global Alumni Association in the 2000s, and more latterly completed his DBA at the school as well. He's also currently a Managing Director at Accenture, where he is a Global Lead for Leadership and Culture. Welcome, Simon. Panos is a Professor of Digital Innovation here at the school, and he's also Digital Learning Lead for Executive Education. Welcome both. Just start off, first of all, Simon, just tell us a little bit more about your role at Accenture and your current role here, your new role here as well at the school. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm very excited about the new role. It's a bit of a lifelong ambition, really, to move into and become part of academia. So I'm really excited about that. And I think it's a good complement to the role I have at Accenture, which is leading, you know, quite a experienced team who work with large clients on significant change around leadership and culture, very often tied to broader organizational shifts in embracing technology or post-merger acquisition or major shifts in customer experience. It's a great, I think it's going to be an interesting combination of application and then the research and teaching associated with that. So bringing the outside world in as well as researching outside world from here. So it's going to be an interesting combination, I hope.
And Panos, just tell us a bit more about your role here at the school.
Yeah, so I am obviously a research professor here at Alliance Manchester Business School, primarily focusing on digital transformation. And I lead a research group that focuses on digital transformation specifically. We bring guests from all over, academic experts, to talk about research all the way from AI to telematics, telemedicine, robotics, blockchain, and others. Very much interested in how change takes place in organizations, which is what we have in common with Simon, but primarily focusing on the technology aspects of it.
In terms of how change takes place, please deeply to your book, Simon, you're a bit of a prolific author, aren't you, on the quiet, and your latest work was around agile leadership. Perhaps that's a good place to start. What actually that book was about, and what is agile leadership, and how is it relevant to today?
It started my doctoral research in the early 2010s, was looking at large organizations shifting to becoming more, embracing technology to become more customer oriented and more agile. And that led to connected leadership. But then part of that was agility. And so I deep dived into that area and did more research with organizations who are implementing more agile ways of working. And what were the leadership attributes that were either, that were the most important in accelerating that agile adoption, both at perhaps a local level, but also at the enterprise level. So it explores that, and it's a good read, apparently. it draws on all my research, but a lot of other people's research as well. It tries to crystallize that into a simple approach to leading to create an agile organization either a capital A or a small A, that engenders high levels of psychological safety, trust, or disruptive thinking, much better prioritization, collaboration, and devolved decision-making, all in the interests of serving the organizational's purpose and the customer value. So in a nutshell, it's that's what it is.
Why is it so important today? I'm guessing the answer is it more important, but why? Why is it more important? And how is it, what do business leaders have to be doing today to be agile, and why is it important?
Well, two key drivers at a very broad level. One is, organizations are changing slower than their environment, which is not a good place to be. So they need to accelerate their ability to change and adapt. And as Panos said, technology is accelerating that exponentially. And the second is the ability to innovate and the ability to create new value for customers, which is competitive, better than other people's value that they can be offered. So that combination of adapt and be able to change more quickly intrinsically, just to embrace change and stay viable, and the ability to innovate and add new value in a complex world where the opportunities for innovation are immense. You mentioned AI, for example, enormous opportunities to add value in innovative ways, but the competition has the same opportunities. So the innovative challenge is immense. So those are driving organizations to want to embrace new ways of working that have much shorter cycles of decision making and implementation, more ability to change priorities and adapt, and at the same time embedding a strong sense of humanity and purpose in the organization. So because the talent shortage in the world feeling it particularly in the UK at the moment, is that challenge is immense, and the ability to attract and retain and develop and support top talent as more routine roles are automated is another battleground that's particularly important.
We'll come on to AI in a minute because there's a lot to talk about there. But in terms of actually the barriers as well at the moment to agile leadership, from your experience of having feet in two camps really, both industry and academia now, what is it you're picking up from the industry side? What are the barriers? What are the issues that business leaders are facing?
Well, especially in large organizations, a high level of risk aversion, the unwillingness to take intelligent risk, that there is they're locked in a regulation and rule-based culture, which is essentially risk averse. That is antithetical to agile ways of working. Related to that is a lack of role clarity. So if we've got absolute clarity in direction and purpose and role clarity through the organization, people can be much more flexible and work in a cross-functional way. Without that, that's a problem. Distance from customer, large organizations tend to become quite inward looking, and silos slow the organization down, but we're inherently a tribe. Human beings are tribal, so we quite like being in our silo. Breaking that and dismantling that and creating fluidity on the end-to-end process, again, is critical to the ability of the organization to adapt quickly. But those are all barriers that are really I see all the time in large client systems. So our job is to help them identify, embrace, and change those.
Mm. Yeah. And how, without getting too much into specifics, how do you begin to sort of approach this really, really difficult subject? You mentioned, the world's moving on quicker than we are in many ways. How do you, if you're managing a large team, how do you respond to these challenges?
We talk about top-down, bottom-up, and middle-in. So it's very difficult for large organizations to change if senior leadership do not want it to change, have not bought into that change, are not embracing it, embodying it, and changing the way they work and behave in order to support it. Bottom up is about helping teams at multiple levels to embrace new ways of working and to put it into practice. And if you get those two working together, that's great. Then middle in is not only changing the middle of organizations, but also helping them learn from outside and become more open to the disruption that is happening around them and learning from it and adapting to it quickly. So there's increasing the organization's ability to learn, which goes down to individuals at the end of the day. Do individuals, especially in senior roles, really embrace outside in learning, or are they locked in a more myopic perspective? We need to help them exit one and embrace the external perspective.
To bring it panelists. I mean, we talked before there about the rapidly changing environment. AI couldn't get more of a topical subject right now, but we're starting to see that the impact that it's going to have. I mean, in the context of what Simon just said there, I mean, how do businesses respond to the huge challenge and opportunities of AI?
Yeah, well, I'm doing some research with some colleagues on the changing capabilities required to adapt to change. And a lot of the research has been focusing on how AI is automating tasks and automating processes and what that does to existing teams and organizations and how do we go beyond that, right? And we focus the research that we're doing focuses on the learning aspects. How do we enable people to learn so that they can develop those new skills and capabilities that would then allow them to work together with technology as opposed to being replaced by technology? I mean, we see that quite a lot now. Industry reports, news are all talking about how do we use technologies like ChatGPT to augment our work. But a lot of that augmentation comes with informed knowledge, right? We need to have the knowledge to use the technology in order to be augmented. If we don't have the knowledge, right, we cannot be augmented. And I think that's the struggle that some organizations are facing. Those that are risk-taking will most probably get on a learning process and a learning journey that would allow them to gain that knowledge and be augmented, right? Whereas the others that are risk averse, trying to control everything and rejecting what the technology can offer, will most probably suffer because they will not go through that learning process of changing their skills and roles and tasks and potentially even jobs, right? So that change process, I think, requires a lot of the things that Simon is talking about, you know, the agility, the adaptation, the learning that needs to take place in order to be augmented by technology.
What are the dangers here? I mean, if a company is risk averse, remains risk averse, there's one obvious answer is they're probably going out of business eventually. But if they start with AI and they're risk averse, what are the challenges there? Because, you know, could it be that they're, you know, are they not engaging enough with the AI technology? You know what I mean? Are they just take off the shelf, have that product, and they're not really quite understanding what it can do for that business?
I think that the danger is irrelevance from customers. You know, if an organization, if the bank you use, or the mobile phone operator you use, or the supermarket you go to, that we go to, if it's not staying as relevant as the next one, I think consumers are tuned into relevance inordinately more than when they were 10 years ago, 50 years ago. And that's, again, that's driven by the experience we have every day through our handsets, our mobiles, and other forms of input. So that the expectations are very high, moving, and organizations that are risk averse will be slow to respond, and therefore the relevance gap gets bigger. And that's a deeply worrying place to be. There is a degree of consumer lethargy sometimes in switching. But that's only putting off the inevitable. Mm-hmm. Unless organizations can reframe their role in the world and their role in their customers' lives and embrace it, which requires a positive shift rather than simply removal of risk aversion. It says we need to take a step into the unknown. And that's very risky, and that's very challenging for organizational leaders who've got to where they're successful because they've been hierarchical, the hero leader sorting things out, or they've worked a system that is intrinsically risk averse.
Mm. Do you think, I mean, Panos touched there on the importance of the knowledge, knowing what to do with these applications. Mm. Do you think the knowledge is there, or are we lagging behind badly there in terms of knowledge of digital technology and what they can do and provide?
No, a lot of our work is digital literacy for leaders and increasing their ability to assimilate quickly what's happening around them. Things change more and more rapidly, but also just making sure that they understand and are fluent in what it implies for their organization. So it's one thing knowing about something, and it's another thing being able to interpret the implications for our organization or our product and to do something about it. So that fluency, that ability to interpret is key. And I think even things like reverse mentoring can be very helpful. You're getting help. Different generations can help each other in different ways. And sometimes the more junior staff, might be the new joiners, have a greater appreciation of what's going in the marketplace than perhaps a senior executive who's quite comfortable and living in a slightly isolated world.
This brings us very neatly to actually we have some new executive education courses being launched later this year here around digital learning, and you're involved with that, Panos.
Yes.
And that's going to be interesting, isn't it, as well, who might come to those courses. It could be younger staff as well as perhaps more senior business figures in the business, because those younger staff have been brought up with all this, and then maybe what just tell us a bit about that.
I mean we are launching 16 new open programs in Exec Ed. Many of those programs are digitally oriented. So there's one on digital transformation, there's one on cybersecurity, data science and AI, and fintech, and many more, but also more traditional, more topics that are taught in, I guess, all executive programs. But the what I want to say in relation to the generation shift, or the demands, I would put them as demands. I think, as Simon said, there's a lot of customer demand. Everything is available on our devices. Everything is available on demand. And I think that pressure that's coming from the customers to always be on the cutting edge is probably more disruptive than the technology themselves. Right. You know, that demand from the customer to, oh, well, yeah, I'm your customer and I like what you're offering me, but I need that extra bit of support, or I need that extra feature or service to be added because I've heard about it or I've seen it on a plugin, a ChatGPT plugin, or another company's doing it. And this is, I think, what Simon was saying earlier. If you don't adjust, if you don't adapt to those, right? If you don't have the digital leadership to understand what those features are and how they can be implemented in your current offerings, right? That's the knowledge and the learning process. Then you're probably going to be disrupted by your own customers, let alone by the market.
Can I come in there?
Yes, of course.
So edge computing is a classic example. You know, an organization pushing technology to the front line, enabling the customer, people working on the customer interface, to use AI and other forms of technology to enhance customer value, to solve customer problems, to get things resolved quickly, is all great. And technology is there to support that and continue to evolve. However, the decision to do that and the release of power to enable frontline people to make decisions is an organizational issue. And ultimately, it's a senior leadership issue. How far do we want to go to trust people? How far do we want to go to work hard to provide the parameters and the support and the training to enable people to make great decisions? That's a senior leadership issue. So these things are all related. And I'm slightly biased, but a lot of it comes back to leaders.
Because it comes back to your word, doesn't it?
To enable all the other things.
To enable
brilliant work around digitization or
Order
transformation to really deliver value.
I was just touched way back, about 10 minutes ago, you talked about the importance of staying human, if you like. I can't remember your precise words, something along those lines. Just what did you mean by that when you said that, you know, in terms of technology and staying human?
I think there is a danger that organizations are becoming more and more challenged to embrace technology more quickly. New ways of working, there's a strong process orientation to Agile, for example, when it's implemented. That the importance of human beings and how they feel and respond is sometimes not given a sufficiently high priority in all of this. Because whatever the new process or whatever the new system, if people choose not to use it, or people don't want to really embrace it, the value will be diminished. So humans, even with AI and automation, the human embracing of and implementation of investment is critical to whether that investment in whatever is successful or not. And leadership has a key role to play, perhaps the key role to play, in how important the humanity in the organization is perceived. Or is it, are we lions on a spreadsheet? Or are we individuals who are there to be nurtured and developed and supported to be brilliant at what we do?
Which brings us actually onto some of the wider work you've been looking at over the years, which is around stakeholder capitalism, you know, companies, the wider sort of, if you like, in terms of society, how they should be positioned. I mean, just tell us a little bit about some of that work and how that links in, also your new role here, you know, in terms of the research you're going to be doing.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited about the opportunity to do more research in this area. I think that the realization of the role of the organization in society, about how critical that has, it's been accelerating for some time. You know, the last 10, 20 years, there's more and more work that's been done But I think the climate crisis is bringing it to a head. The impact of climate crisis on communities around the world is bringing it to a head. And the ability for organisations to ignore the communities in which they operate, for banks to ignore the companies they invest in, or whatever area it is, the ability for organisations to remain blinkered and focus only on profit, I think those days, I hope, are numbered. Because more progressive organisations, being much more purpose-led, are taking significant steps to embrace this. But I don't think it's enough. And the profit motive is still predominant, driven by the perception that organisations are there, commercial organisations are there to serve, to drive shareholder value. And I think that's just not the truth. They're there. The shareholder value of the shareholders who invest capital are one of the key stakeholders, clearly. But they're not the only one. So let's keep it in balance and let's see how the organisation can have societal impact as well as commercial success. And the two should not be mutually exclusive, but it requires some rewiring, I think, in the way leaders think about the nature of the organisation and their role in it, especially at the most senior levels.
Just, you've had a really distinguished business career. What is it that drives you? Why are you so interested in this particular subject? And I'm just struck now listening to you there. Why is this something that you're really interested in? On the spot.
Well, I think it's what matters most. I think serving profit is meaningless. Really, profit is an enabler to do something, and if the organisation just exists to generate profits to give back to shareholders, it's very transactional. And as I say, we're in a state of crisis. The planet's crumbling. Communities around the world are having a torrid time with climate change, and I just care about it. And I think the more I've worked in the area of leadership over the last 30 years, the more I've realised that the opportunity for leaders to really change things, they have agency through their role. How they choose to exercise that agency is partly driven by the organisation, but partly their choice. And the more senior you get, the more agency you have to change the way the organisation thinks and operates. So let's embrace that and do some good with it, rather than simply being a profit machine. So I think that's an oversimplification, but that's what I care about.
Yeah, just can I ask a second, but in terms of, say, the climate crisis, I mean, do you think even now senior business leaders that you come across, do they totally get it?
Varying degrees of getting it.
So that's quite astonishing, really, that is still the case.
Yeah, I think they understand it intellectually, and human beings on planet watching the news, they'll recognise that there is a crisis unfolding around us. Is it translated into action? Is it translated into changing the investment portfolio of the organisation? Is it translated into changing the way those organisations take a role in the communities in which they operate and which they're happy to extract profit from? Does it change the way in which they are working in a way that is climate responsible or responsible for the ecosystems in which they operate in especially in developing world? Not sufficiently. There are obviously varying degrees and some are exemplars, but they're the minority.
Mm. I don't want to comment on this particular area.
I want to comment on the point about focusing on a transactional approach to doing business versus focusing on a more interactive customer experience, which then translates to different types of value. Right? Value needs not always be financial. It could be social, it could be environmental, it could be more around community values. And that's why I think it's important to shift from this idea, I'm selling a product to get a profit, or I'm selling services, and then I consume whatever the profits are to improve technologies and hire more people, versus I am delivering services that continue to derive value for the customers that are on the receiving end, meaning that they can use that, whatever those services are, to also do things in their community, to do things in their own organization. And there are many examples of you know, more learning oriented services, I guess, would be the immediate candidates for those. But there are others, right? Sustainable community building and green type of services or green type of technologies that serve particular parts of, you know, not even developing countries, but also in the developed world, right? There's regions in England that suffer from energy supplies that could be, you know, supported with green technologies. It's just that the policies are not there and there's no support from local government, et cetera, et cetera. So these types of services that can offer different types of value to the other end, I think, are important.
Very good. Sorry.
No, I heard a wonderful quote at the weekend on a New Statesman podcast about power and the power in politics. And they were assessing, they've just published the top 50 most powerful influencers report. They said, it was a very beautiful summary. He said, power in politics is about the ability to change policy, yes, but also the ability to change minds. And I think the more leaders in organizations recognizing their power to not only control policy and strategy, but to change people's minds for the good, then I think it's deeply exciting for them. The more they embrace that, the more they embody that in their practice as senior executives controlling huge resources, the more rewarding it is for them and the more rewarding it is for all stakeholders.
I think that's a very fitting way just to finish, actually. Very, very thought-provoking. Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Panos. That was a really, really fascinating discussion. And best luck with your new role here.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you both.
Thank you.